Picture a medical battle where surgeons remove every visible trace of a brain tumor, and yet, almost inevitably, it comes right back. That is the dark hallmark of glioblastoma. Standard treatment gives a median survival of just 14.6 months, largely because resilient cancer stem cells survive deep in the brain tissue. Exactly. But a new study published in Communications Biology points to an unexpected vulnerability. What if we could starve those stem cells before they regrow? It comes down to a low-carbohydrate, high-fat diet and limiting how those cells handle energy right after surgery. Let me walk you through it. Picture a textbook cancer cell. For nearly a century, the standard story was the Warburg effect. Tumors gorging on sugar and burning it rapidly through glycolysis. But when researchers looked under the hood of glioblastoma stem cells, the microscopic invaders responsible for universal tumor recurrence, they discovered a completely different engine. Wait, so these aggressive stem cells aren't relying on glucose? How did the team even uncover what they're actually burning? They isolated patient-derived stem cells from four glioblastoma cases, two newly diagnosed, two recurrent, and mapped their transcriptomes against healthy human astrocytes harvested during epilepsy surgeries. When they ran the genetic comparisons, over 5,300 genes were significantly upregulated in the cancer stem cells. The surprise was that the top-enriched pathways weren't glycolytic. They were mitochondrial oxidative phosphorylation and fatty acid oxidation. Over 5,000 genes? That is a massive genetic shift. But gene expression is just the blueprint. How did they confirm that these cells are actually consuming fats for ATP rather than sugar? They tested functional metabolism directly using seahorse assays. When they measured the extracellular acidification rate, which tracks active glycolysis, the readout was unexpectedly low. But when they probed fuel dependency, fatty acid oxidation was the clear dominant pathway driving mitochondrial respiration. Key enzymes involved in lipid synthesis and oxidation, like FASN, ACADM, and HADHA, were all heavily elevated, especially in the recurrent patient lines. Okay, here's the thing that stands out to me. The fact that the recurrent stem cells, the ones that survived initial treatment, had the highest expression of those lipid-burning enzymes. They're not just using fat, they're doubling down on it. It really highlights a distinct metabolic identity. These treatment-resistant stem cells rewired their whole system away from sugar and onto lipids to fuel their survival and self-renewal. And that reliance creates a targetable vulnerability. So, to test whether changing systemic fuel availability could actually block glioblastoma in a living brain, the researchers designed a series of orthotopic mouse models using patient-derived stem cells. They preconditioned the animals on either a standard diet or a low-carbohydrate, high-fat diet for roughly 4 weeks, establishing confirmed systemic ketosis before stereotactically injecting 100,000 tumor stem cells into the right frontal lobe. It's like preparing the soil before the seed ever touches it. But wait, if one cohort is eating a fat-heavy diet, were they taking in significantly more calories? Not at all. Weekly calorie intake was virtually identical between the two groups, and both maintained comparable body weights. Yet the results were night and day. In the trial using patient 1 stem cells, which are exceptionally aggressive, with a Ki-67 proliferation index of 79%, 17 out of 18 mice on standard chow developed massive brain tumors. On the low-carb, high-fat diet, only 2 out of 17 formed tumors, and those two had dramatically smaller volumes. That takes tumor occurrence down from over 94% all the way to under 12%. And they didn't just stop with one aggressive cell line, right? They tested a slower-growing subtype as well. Right. Patient 2 stem cells have a much lower proliferation score, Ki-67 between 10 and 15%, but they infiltrate brain tissue aggressively. On standard diet, over 72% of mice develop tumors within 90 days. On the low-carb, high-fat diet, 0 out of 14 form tumors. Not a single one. 0 out of 14? That is remarkable. And here's the wild part. When the researchers took those non-tumor mice after 18 weeks and switched them back to the normal high-carbohydrate diet, circulating glucose spiked and ketosis disappeared, but the tumors still never came back. The diet completely and irreversibly wiped out the stem cell's ability to initiate a tumor. That's a crucial distinction. In most metabolic cancer trials, as soon as you stop the diet, the tumor bounces right back. But here, shutting down lipid access at that critical initial window permanently broke their tumor-initiating power. Hold on. If these glioblastoma stem cells rely on burning fats for fuel, why on earth would feeding a high-fat diet actually suppress tumor growth? That sounds completely counterintuitive.
It does sound upside down until you look at where the fats actually go. Picture a metabolic sponge sitting in the abdomen. When the body switches to a low-carb, high-fat diet, the liver kicks into overdrive. The metabolomic data showed the liver dramatically ramps up peripheral lipid catabolism. We're talking elevated diglycerides like DG36-1, pantothenic acid, and glutathione, soaking up and processing those fats in the body before they ever make it up to the head.
Right. And the strange part is that by making the liver hog all the fat metabolism, you end up creating a local lipid drought in the brain. It's essentially restricting fat access to the skull.
That is altered lipid partitioning in a nutshell. When researchers mapped brain lipidomics, they saw a distinct reduction in metabolizable lipids available for fatty acid oxidation. Brain tissues showed reduced expression of the lipid transporter CD36, plus major fat processing enzymes like FASN and HADHA. Even TCA cycle intermediates like malate and fumarate dropped significantly in brain tissue, pointing to a massive drop in local metabolic activity.
It's a brutal irony for the tumor. The stem cells in the brain are sitting there, primed to run on fat oxidation, but the liver has effectively intercepted their fuel supply before it crosses the blood-brain barrier.
Exactly. You flood the system with fats, but because peripheral organs like the liver consume them under ketosis, lipid access to the brain actually contracts. So those invasive stem cells, lacking the flexible fuel sources normal cells have, find themselves starved of the exact fatty acids they need to build ATP and drive tumor growth.
Which brings up a massive question that always surfaces when we talk about ketogenic diets in cancer. When the liver breaks down all those dietary fats, it floods the bloodstream with ketone bodies, like beta-hydroxybutyrate. Since these stem cells are so resilient, why wouldn't they just pivot and burn those ketones as a backup fuel source?
That's exactly the escape hatch you'd expect a cancer cell to exploit. But imagine a specialized factory furnace built strictly to burn liquid heavy oil. If you flood the chamber with natural gas, no matter how much is floating around, the furnace simply lacks the burners to ignite it. The researchers tested this scenario directly in the lab by exposing stem cell lines from both patient 1 and patient 3 to 5 millimoles of beta-hydroxybutyrate. And when they ran those cells through the seahorse metabolic flux assays, did they see any pivot at all? Not even a blip. The ketone treatment caused zero change in the cell's fatty acid oxidation dependency or overall capacity. They even ran dedicated fatty acid oxidation assays. And again, adding beta-hydroxybutyrate didn't alter their metabolic activity. The stem cells were fundamentally unable to tap into ketones to generate ATP.
And to be absolutely sure, they double-checked the tissue transport infrastructure as well. Monocarboxylate transporters, MCT1 and MCT2, are the specific doorways that move ketone bodies across the blood-brain barrier and into cells. Even with mice in full, blood-confirmed systemic ketosis, MCT1 and MCT2 levels in the brain tissue showed no significant upregulation compared to normal diet controls.
So the trap is airtight. The diet restricts the metabolizable fats the stem cells desperately need in the brain, and the resulting flood of ketone bodies can't act as a rescue fuel. They're literally surrounded by energy they can't digest. Now, to prove that this whole effect really came down to brain-specific lipid partitioning and not just some universal magic property of the diet, the researchers ran a critical control experiment. They took those exact same patient glioblastoma stem cells and implanted them peripherally, right in the flank of the mice. Wait, so they put brain cancer stem cells down in the flank? What did the low-carb, high-fat diet do to those tumors? It did the exact opposite. In the flank, where circulating fats are easily accessible in peripheral tissue, the high-fat diet actually turbocharged tumor growth.
You're kidding! So the exact same diet that wiped out brain tumors turned around and fueled them in the flank? What kind of numbers are we talking about? It was a massive shift. For the aggressive patient 1 cell line, 47% of mice on a normal diet formed flank tumors. On the high-fat diet, that shot up to 80%. And with the less proliferative patient 2 line, flank tumor incidence jumped from 50% under normal diet to 90% under the high-fat diet.
90%? That is such a dramatic flip. It completely flips the script on how we evaluate metabolic diets.
It really does. It shows us that glioblastoma stem cells are lipid-hungry, opportunistic feeders. In the peripheral body, there's no liver mechanism restricting lipid access to the tissue, so the cells just feast on the extra fat. In the brain, the host's systemic lipid shift starves them. Location isn't a secondary factor. It is the deciding factor.
It really drives home that context is everything. A diet isn't inherently anti-cancer or pro-cancer in a vacuum. It all hinges on where the tumor lives and how the host organs distribute the fuel. Now, stopping brain tumor stem cells by cutting off their fatty acid supply is a huge breakthrough on its own. But as the team dug into the data, they discovered this low-carb, high-fat diet was doing a lot more than just starving the tumor. You'd think starving the tumor would be enough, right? It's basically a home renovation where you fix a leak in the roof and somehow the plumbing and electrical system start running better too. Beyond tumor control, they measured major shifts in the gut microbiome, clearer cognitive behavior, and even a shutdown of the cancer's circadian hijack. I have to ask, what was actually happening down in the gut? Because microbiome claims can get pretty hand-wavy, but they brought hard sequencing data here. They saw a complete restructuring. The diet drove up the Firmicutes to Bacteroides ratio, expanding helpful microbes like lactobacillales, specifically Lactococcus lactis, which provides a probiotic boost, while shrinking Bacteroides. They also observed an uptick in Streptococcaceae, a bacterial family tied to anti-tumor activity. Right, and the remarkable part is how that showed up in how the mice actually moved and behaved. On standard diets, mice with brain tumors had severe motor deficits, taking endless frantic steps or walking in circles in the foot placement tests. But the diet group walked straight and actively explored open spaces, just like non-tumor controls.
Their quality of movement was night and day. And then you have the circadian clock network. Aggressive glioblastoma stem cells typically exploit clock genes, overexpressing proteins like CLOCK and LGMN to keep themselves dividing. But in the mice fed the high-fat diet, CLOCK expression in brain tissue dropped right back to normal baseline levels.
So just by restricting lipid access in the brain, the diet essentially recalibrates the tumor's master clock while restoring gut health and cognitive function?
That's the beauty of it. It's a multi-front hit. You starve the cancer stem cells, quiet the circadian signals fueling them, reshape the gut flora, and preserve cognitive function all at the same time.
So whether this specific post-op dietary window actually holds up in human trials, that's still the big open question.
It really is. And how a diet like this pairs with radiation and chemo later on remains to be seen. But using metabolism to target residual cells when other tools are paused, it's a completely new way to view that window.
A clever wedge in a really tight timeline. Thanks, Hope.